You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to TCRG to CEO Radio. I'm your host, Courtney J., and I'm back again in this very same week because Allison and I, from the last episode, did a webinar that seems like it was very, very helpful to a lot of people. I've gotten a lot of nice messages following the webinar, as has Allison. And we were able to extract the audio so that we could put it up on the podcast. Just in case you're not in any of our Facebook groups and you want to learn how to really run your classes online. The last episode where I interviewed Allison kind of got you on the surface level of knowing that you can, in fact, do your classes online. They might be slightly different, and it might require some adaptability and just willingness for change on your part. But in this episode from the webinar, we're going to get into really the nitty-gritty, how to do the tech stuff and how to get started so that you can have an effective teaching experience, your students can have a positive experience. And what we want you to keep in mind at this point is that it doesn't have to be perfect. Done is better than perfect. And don't let perfect be the enemy of good. This is going to be so valuable for your students to be able to have that normalcy, have that outlet for physical activity, keep their mind sharp, continuing to learn. And of course, if you're the business owner here, you want to be able to keep your studio open. You want to keep that revenue coming in. We all still have bills to pay. So this webinar audio should be really, really helpful for everyone out there trying to make this switch to online learning. And if you have any questions at all, please jump into our listeners-only Facebook group. You can find it linked in the show notes, or it's located at facebook.com/TCRG2CEO with a little backslash at the end. And you can find me over on Instagram. My handle is @CourtneyJ_TCRG, and that'll be linked in the show notes as well. Please enjoy the webinar and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you all so much. So it's so wonderful to be with you today virtually. Courtney and I are going to introduce ourselves as the hosts, and then we're going to invite you to introduce yourselves as well through the chat box. So stand by for those instructions. My name's Allison Duvall. I teach with the McTaggart School in Lexington, Kentucky, and I'm going to turn it over to my co-host.
Yeah, thanks, Allison. This is really Allison's show, and I am the happy co-host along for the ride. I'm Courtney J, and I live here in Connecticut. I see some of my Connecticut pals on the webinar here today, too. And I have my school, School Rink alumni. So awesome to be here and share all this with you guys today.
Thank you both. Thank you for being here. And thank you all so much for being here. So what I want to invite you to do now in the chat box is type your name, your location, and your school name. The chat box is being recorded along with the video. So we'll get to see who all participated in today's webinar.
So Josh found the chat box. Hey, Josh from England. You're up late tonight. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Heather. My friend Megan from across town in Lexington.
Nice. We have people from all over.
This is excellent. There's so many of you, we can't catch all your names and say them all out loud.
Hi, Orla. Miss you.
Wonderful. Well, as you all continue typing in the chat box, what I want to do before I share the agenda is to commend you all for taking the courageous step to figure out how to teach virtual classes in this very strange time. What Courtney and I hope to do for you all today is give you a lot of information and also some tricks, some tools, some opportunity to engage with one another. We hope also to lower your anxiety about using this platform and to encourage you and let you know that it will all be okay. It's going to work. Your students are digital natives and they will roll with the punches and yeah. It's going to be great. You're going to do a wonderful job. So I'm going to go ahead and share the agenda. Just one moment. And Courtney, can you confirm you can see the screen?
I can.
Excellent. So hopefully everyone can see me sharing my screen. The order of events today, we just did our welcome and introductions. We're going to next talk about Zoom basics. As much as one can when you all are participants and Courtney and I are the hosts, so we have some more permissions than you do presently. But we'll talk through, and you can take notes on what permissions and administrative controls you'll have when you host your own Zoom. We'll talk about preparing to teach virtually, and that will lead into some lesson planning work. Courtney and I will both share some of our own lesson plans. I'll talk about a beginner lesson plan that I implemented this past Sunday with my students. Courtney will talk about upper levels. And then we're going to give you some time to do your own planning and processing. So some of you might feel at that moment that you need some time just to think and process everything you've learned so far. Others of you might feel very inspired to want to go ahead and start working on some lesson plans. So we'll give you your own time. Following that, we're going to break out into groups, very small groups. I've got this amazing control breaking you out into smaller groups that most Zoom accounts don't have, but I'm happy to be able to bring that today. So you can work and share in small dialogue groups. Then we'll all call you back from the breakout for a group debrief by chat box. And again, we won't be all able to read everything as it comes in, but the chat box will be recorded and I'll circulate that after the fact so you can read everyone's great ideas. We will conclude with an open Q&A and then we will adjourn. So that's today's plan. I will stop sharing and Courtney, I wonder if you might want to start and talk about why you like Zoom as a platform. Why do you choose to use Zoom for these virtual
classes? So I think there's a lot of people on today's webinar that are in various stages of either panic or planning or processing how much the world has changed in the last, 7, 10 days, depends where you're living. And Allison and I were talking earlier this week for my podcast, and I am familiar with Zoom from podcasting. To me, it's very easy to use. It's pretty intuitive. And I think it's important for all of us to keep things as simple and efficient as possible. And for the people that are in kind of the active doing problem solving phase of this situation we find ourselves in where we can't open our studios in a physical sense like we're used to, people are trying to find solutions on how they can keep their business open, how they can keep their students learning. And I've seen a lot of ways that get the job done, but I find Zoom and like live streaming your classes to be the most efficient way to do this. And Allison and I were talking about it, and she had already gotten started. She hit the ground running over the weekend. And I think this will provide everyone a lot of reassurance that it doesn't have to take up more time than it does to normally teach your classes. You don't need as much technology and everything that you probably think that you might need. And your students should be able to adapt to it pretty quick, which is all a win-win-win for all of us.
Absolutely. And there were some questions that I was seeing on Facebook in the Facebook group this week about the different levels of Zoom. There's a free account where you can have 40-minute meetings, but it will kick you out after 40 minutes. As far as I know, with that account, you can have as many 40-minute meetings as you want, but it can be a little bit of a nuisance to keep rescheduling a new meeting. So I recommend, and our studio has purchased the lowest paid account. I want to say it's a business account or a pro account, but it's the lowest one.
Yeah, $14.99 a month.
Yeah, in US dollars. So that's what I recommend, 12 in the UK. Josh Reddick said, thanks so much, Joshua. So I'd really recommend that. And then our studio is quite small and we don't have any classes that happen at the same time. So we only have one class at a time. And so we just use that same account and schedule all our classes in the Zoom account, just sharing the same one between our teachers.
And I'll be doing the same. We typically run classes at the same time, and I'm just planning the schedule in such a way that we can all use that same account. So as long as you don't have a huge, huge studio, I think it should be sufficient.
Absolutely. And then Courtney, you and I were talking earlier today about why you think it's more efficient and effective to just continue doing live classes and not go to the trouble of producing edited videos. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and I think there's a few reasons for this. Firstly, as studio owners or teachers, some of you have day jobs where you have other work you need to do during the day, and that schedule might not have changed. You're used to going into the studio, teaching classes, heading home, maybe do some lesson planning during the day when you get a chance. And obviously, we want to keep it as simple and efficient as possible. And I've seen a lot of people try and figure out some solutions this week. And I've seen a lot of people going into their studios trying to pre-record a lot of content, which means you're going in, shooting the content, videos, lessons, whatever you want it to be. They're coming home, editing all that content, waiting for all that content to upload. If anyone's tried to do this before, videos are really big files, especially if you're filming things for an hour or more. Then they're waiting to upload it to YouTube, and then they're sending it out, and it's just a lot of extra work. And through hosting classes online through Zoom, you're essentially showing up at your home dance studio if you have one, sitting here in your living room, hosting your class. And for the student, it's very, very similar, and we'll get into that a little bit later, of how you try and keep it as similar to their regular class as possible. You're gonna try and teach the class as if you are all in the same room, you're just all in your own individual practice spaces. So part of it is for your own sanity and time. The other part is for student experience and being able to actually be there live with them and help them and give them real-time corrections.
That's great, Courtney. And what we're gonna do now, folks, is kind of walk you through as many of the features as we can for you as a participant, and then we can describe what features you'll have access to as the host when you set up your classes. So the first thing is I'm gonna ask you all to unmute yourselves just so you know how to unmute, and then I'm gonna ask you to immediately mute. Perfect. Everyone's successfully doing that. If you can go ahead and mute yourself again. And if you have trouble, Courtney and I have master powers. We can mute you.
Okay.
Excellent. Looks like everybody did pretty good.
I think so. Okay. There's still a few lines that are active. All right. So one of the features you'll have as a teacher is, or as a host rather, a Zoom host, is you will have the ability to mute all your students. And I find that critical. I would love to see if someone creates a way to do this, but I would say it's likely impossible for you to have all your students have all their sound on and be dancing hard shoe at the same time. It's gonna be a cacophony, it's gonna cause feedback loops and terrible audio quality. If someone figures it out, tell us. But you're gonna wanna use that mute all feature, and you can also make it possible for your students to unmute themselves. Or you can just maintain that power and just have them physically raise their hand. You see them and you can unmute them. Some other features, I'm gonna do the screen share feature again, which I did earlier. And Courtney, can you confirm you can see my screen?
Yep.
Excellent. So I've actually not used screen share with my students yet, but I could imagine perhaps at some point if I put together a workout for our champs, I might want to throw it up on the screen so they know what to do and I can watch them and make sure they're doing the workout or something like that. So you can use that. It's a simple just click on the screen share button, which many of you might have access to now. I'd ask you refrain from clicking screen share as participants, but that's something you can do with your students. Courtney, do you want to talk about a few of the other features?
Yeah, earlier Allison and I were playing around with the best way to share sound or music or however you'd like to use that. And Allison had used a tool called Zencastr, and she can talk a little bit more about that. But even if you want to keep it very simple, there's a button under the share screen, which again, maybe don't hit that right now, but there's three tabs that come up: basic, advanced, and files. And if you hit the advanced button, there's a section that says computer sound only. And what I'm gonna do is I'm going to click that button and I'm going to play something from my Apple Music library. If you have, you know, files saved on your computer, you can use that. If you use Spotify, you can use that. So I'm gonna click that. And then if everyone wants to listen, you can hear fully. And if you wanna stay in the chat, you can do that. All right, cool. So it sounds like we have people that can hear that. And I saw someone asked if you could see that or where the share screen button is on the participant view. For me, it's right down in the very center of my bottom menu, and that's the same thing when I generally host. But I had it earlier when Allison and I were kind of doing a meeting where she was technically the host. So you should be able to see it.
And another thing I would recommend before you do your first few classes, I know so many of us on the call are friends and colleagues. Just meet up with your Irish dance teacher friends and colleagues and do a practice Zoom. Even just a 5-minute one can put your mind at ease for all the features and functionality that we're talking about. So I'd really recommend that. The other thing I wanted to, did you want to field a question?
Yep. Just because someone, Megan, you had asked if you can use the Fesh app or Beat app. I was just testing this earlier with Allison, and unfortunately, it sounds like you can't. The Fesh and Beat platforms are app only, and it won't let you do that. So you will need something on your computer or something that your Zoom is able to share that way, which is unfortunate. Hopefully, maybe they'll come out with some kind of desktop platform for that.
We can all send those good vibes to the desktop guys. So another thing I wanted to demo was we got some questions in the Facebook group and Facebook event about microphones and tech. I use a Snowball mic, and I think Courtney has one too. We're twins. I don't know how long non-essential items like microphones will be shipped around the world, but you might as well check out a Snowball mic. There's certainly other things on the market, but I like this mic quite a bit. And what I've discovered is it's a good enough microphone that I can play music to my Bluetooth speaker next to the microphone while I call the rhythms of steps. So I'll demo that right now. You can hear what it sounds like. It's not as clear as Courtney's audio that she shared, but still helpful. Let me turn it up. Courtney, can you hear that? So you can see the difference between the level of my voice and the music versus what Courtney was using. So if you've got a Bluetooth speaker, it works just fine with a nice microphone. So that's one thing. And then Courtney, you had asked me to talk a little bit about, or you mentioned Zencastr briefly.
Yeah.
And I'll put this URL participants in the chat box so you can go to it. Zencastr is a podcasting platform. It's free to use. I'm sure that there's paid levels. I just use the free version. What I did to prepare for my very first classes this week for my beginners was I did what you just saw. I played a reel and I dubbed my voice talking over the reel, their steps. So they have audio practice tracks with Miss Allison calling their steps. And they have no excuse not to practice and get that rhythm right. So that's what I did. And Zencastr is beautifully easy to use, produces great audio. You download to your computer and you can share the tracks with your students. So that's another great thing. Courtney, have we gone over all the Zoom features we wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think the people that were here early heard a little bit more about the speaker view versus the gallery view. There's a little toggle up at the top. For me, it's in my upper right-hand corner. It looks like the keyboard shortcut for that is Alt F2, if you're a shortcut kind of user. And if you click that, you'll either see me, my face is big right now in the speaker view, and then if we switch over to Allison, it'll switch to her video. Whereas if you're in the gallery view, you'll see everybody in little tiny screens. I mean, there's 124 people right here, so the squares are probably really tiny. So we recommended that everyone use the speaker view for this particular occasion.
That's great. And then Olivia, you had asked this question just chatting with me today, Olivia. Great question now about the range of this microphone. Someone also asked about how it plugs in. It plugs in via USB. So if you have a computer without a USB port, I don't know the answer. My computer's a little more old-fashioned, still has a USB port. So I'm going to actually back up now the length of this cable so you can see how far I can get from the camera. And I just walk around with this microphone and talk to the students. So I did this last night with my adults. I actually taught steps just fine. I moved the camera so they could see my feet. And I can back up nearly 10 feet from my computer. So that's the best that I figured out to do is have a microphone that plugs into the computer that allows me to walk around. Of course, you could do it another way, but that seems to work pretty well for me so far.
And Laura, I see your question about using the gallery view for your classes. Total personal choice, but I will definitely be using the gallery view for my classes so I can see all of them. And when we get into lesson plans, I can tell you a little bit about how I plan to use that gallery feature too.
Excellent. We'll wait and see if there's any more Zoom and tech questions coming in. And then next we're going to move on to preparing to teach virtually.
We have a question about using the Zoom app as opposed to a desktop computer. And I know there's a lot of users. I can see those who have their video turned on. It looks like you are using like your phone or your tablet, and you might not have all of the functionality quite as accessible. Like it might like fade and go away depending on where you tap. Allison, do you have experience using the Zoom app as opposed to the desktop version?
I've used it to host very small meetings before. I will not be using it to host my classes. That said, one of my assistant teachers used an iPad to host his class, but I was there as his tech backup and I was the DJ. So he taught through his tablet. I played music from my computer. So that's another thing, is you don't have to go it alone. If you have assistants or maybe you've got some senior dancers who are pretty tech savvy, have them help you be your tech host so you can be focused on the content you're delivering, on your instruction, and they can be there to help you troubleshoot.
And then a couple other questions that are in here. We'll get into the logistics about like how to email out or distribute your class through Zoom a little bit later. The name of the microphone, it's a Blue Snowball. I got mine on Amazon, I'm sure. Yep. Allison and I have the same one, just different colors, but that's what it looks like. The cord does come with it. It just goes right from the mic and into the USB port of your laptop. Chris, as far as iPad or laptop, I mean, technically either is fine. I always prefer to use like a real computer. It's just my personal style.
Great. And talking about the logistics, later on, I will post in the chat box and I will share with you all in the Facebook group. I created a shareable Google Doc with all of the things we did to prepare our teaching staff to move virtual, including sample email copy. Like the very first time you email your parents to prep them, it gives Zoom tutorials, walks them through the process of how to set their child up for success. And then there's two other sample emails, one that you would send after your first class, just stuff like that. So I'll make that resource available to you as well. Courtney, are you ready to move on to preparing to teach virtually?
Yep, I think we're ready to go.
Excellent. So do you want to talk a little bit about the space that you decided to teach in? I know you moved your office from upstairs to downstairs.
I did. So if anyone follows me on Instagram, I posted on my story today how I moved my whole desktop computer setup down to my dining room, which also backs up like to my living room, just so I would have some space to back up and be able to show my students my feet. My office was just a little bit smaller. Allison was telling me earlier that she marked out like a painter's tape little square that would show up in her video feed, which I thought was great, and I'm probably gonna do the same thing. I figure if this is the new normal, I better just embrace it. My dining room is now my dance studio. And for me, that was a personal decision. I could go down to my studio and record things, but the internet connection just isn't as reliable. And with these types of things, having a steady connection, I think, is way more important than having, you know, your true studio setup. Other than that, as long as you have a good internet connection, good lighting, you know, you want your students to actually be able to see what you're doing. It will improve their experience. And then as long as you don't live in some kind of warehousey, you know, high ceiling, fancy apartment or condo, I think acoustics should be okay. I think personal choice. I mean, if you're used to teaching like in your hard shoes or that maybe you have a home studio or some type of temporary setup that you can turn your living room into a studio.
That's what I've done. I've actually done three. I teach fitness as well, so I've been teaching fitness in different places in my house and dance. And I use my bedroom. I use different parts of my first floor. So just figuring it out as I go and knowing where the light is best at what times of day and what lamps I need to bring around when it's dark outside. So, you know, get those desk lamps and move them around to provide you some lighting. Next, we were going to talk about expectations and classroom roles, because we know that could be, that's going to be the newest thing, is how do you maintain your presence as a teacher, your same expectations and classroom roles in the virtual space. And for me, with our little beginners, which was the first class I taught virtually, all the expectations were the same. They know that we start class with a short conversation so that when they stand up to dance, there's no more talking. And that was exactly what they did. And I'm just really good about keeping all of our children on a routine so they know exactly what to expect. They know how to behave and how to feel safe in the space. So the things that were lovely that I didn't even have to remind them, but they remembered and just did it by default, they would raise their hands if their shoe came untied and they say, "Miss Allison, can I tie my shoe?" Or they'd raise their hand and they'd say, "Miss Allison, I need to go to the bathroom." And so they would do that, and it just cracked me up, because, you know, they could run away, they're in their house. But if you're present as a teacher and engaging with your students, they're paying attention to you. And these children, we know, they love screens. And so if you're an engaging person on the screen, talking with them, like calling for them, congratulating them when they do something well, they're going to stay engaged with you. So Courtney, do you want to talk a little bit about the expectations and classroom rules you're planning to use?
Yes. And when I sent out our email to parents being like, "Hey, guess what? We're going online. You know, everything is business as usual. We're just going to do it from our own homes." I sent out a big part about, you know, finding the right space to use and kind of what those expectations would be. And one of the things that I stressed is that you need to find a space to take your online dance class that doesn't have distractions, whether that's toys, whether that's other devices and screens. Sometimes that's other family members. It depends what type, you know, time of day you're hosting your classes and things like that. But trying to have your student come into their own space and realizing that this is their new dance studio, not, you know, you're not having a FaceTime with a friend. You can't wander in and out of the class or the call. You're going to use the bathroom before class starts, just like you would if you showed up to the studio. You're going to show up prepared for class, meaning you have all your shoes, you have your water. And I think kids, especially at this point in time where their world has basically been turned upside down, they're really going to crave and appreciate that normalcy. And like Allison said, that routine, and trying to keep their virtual studio as similar to their physical studio as possible.
Definitely. We have done some of the other things we were going to do for you in the preparing to teach virtually section. We've actually already covered the sample copy for emails that we're going to send around, demos of our microphones, music. So some other things that folks have been asking about in the chat box is like, how do you teach steps and the space? How far does the microphone extend and stuff like that? So I've just had to become comfortable with the idea that steps aren't going to move very far. My house is not that big. I don't have a huge studio here. And we closed our studio entirely to everyone, so we're not going in. So I've been teaching things really small instead of moving them a lot. I talk about the blocking and where they'll move on the stage eventually for new steps, but the kids mostly know their steps by now. And then I shoot some videos that I've needed to send to my students after the fact. For practice, I shoot those and try to move more in those videos. But in the virtual classroom, you're really kind of stuck and you just have to become comfortable with it. What about you, Courtney? How do you think you're going to navigate movement?
With our championship classes, we have been in a drill phase the last 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks or so. So for them, it's actually going to be the reverse. It's the challenge going from the drill stage and starting to string things together and how to manage their space. We have a private Facebook group for our families, and I actually sent them a video from when I was practicing for world championships a few years ago, and it was me dancing in like a 4x8 room filled with instruments, and I was like, "See guys, look, I did my whole hornpipe in here. Like, you can do it too. Like, it's different." But stressing the fact that smaller spaces can often make you focus on technique more is kind of what I'm selling right now.
Definitely. Gets you higher up on your toes, squeezing your knees, crossing, all the stuff. You can't move and rely on momentum to get your leaps up. You really got to push. You were also going to talk about, Courtney, and this will allow me to prep a video for sharing.
Sure.
Would you talk about Dance Studio Pro for those who use that platform?
Yeah. So I don't know how many people in the chat, feel free to put in the chat if you use a studio management software. There's a few different options that are out there. My personal preference is Dance Studio Pro, but there's also Jackrabbit, Dance Biz, the Mindbody one. It kind of depends what your business model is. Yeah, Studio Director is another one. So I'm most familiar with Dance Studio Pro. So I'm speaking from that. Someone had asked a question earlier about how to distribute their class links, or I plan to make my online classes available for replay. A lot of the school districts around here are implementing like live learning for school, and they might not be able to make it to their online dance class now at the same time. So Dance Studio Pro, under your classes menu, those that are familiar with it, you have your menu at the top, there's the classes button. You drop down and you have all your classes that you set up, all your different levels, days of the week, whatever. So if I went in and clicked on Beginner One Monday class, along the left-hand menu where you see your students, your transactions, everything else, there's a button or a menu that they just added called Online Classes. And in that, if you click on that, you can drop a link to a replay, or you can drop the link to your live class. And then all you need to do is distribute it to your class through that interface. And to me, that is a game changer. I'm so excited that they rolled out that feature kind of in response to what a lot of us are doing, taking their classes online. It just makes it so much easier to distribute and broadcast that instead of having to copy the link and send it to every, you know, email address of your students. If you're doing, you know, your online classes at different windows during the day, it just makes it so much easier. So if you use Dance Studio Pro, highly recommend implementing that. And thank you to Dance Studio Pro for reducing our fees during these troubled times.
And we are much more kind of MacGyvering it. At my school in Lexington, we use something called ClassBug, but then we do all of our email communications separately in MailChimp, or just teachers emailing our students directly, the classes that we teach. So yes, once you set up your Zoom meeting, it will create a URL that's unique to that meeting. You just copy it and you send that link. So it's pretty simple to do once you get a hang of it. And Zoom itself has a lot of amazing tutorials. If this is all really new territory for you, they're going to give you much more in-depth training on how to use their platform. I have a video queued up. So is that okay, Courtney, if I do that next?
Yep. The only questions I see in the chat are about replays for meetings. And I thought I just saw one that I wanted to answer. About like setting up a recurring meeting so you don't have to create individual class links.
Yes. Yes, you can do that too very easily. When you go onto Zoom on your browser and you set up a recurring class, it's really simple.
So you just drop that recurring class link into your Dance Studio Pro online class thing, or send it to that class, and then everyone will be able to jump on at the right time.
Yeah.
Orla's asking about consent form for parents to sign. Check with your insurance carrier. Some insurance carriers allow for online classes. Some do not. So you'd have to check with that, because I know a few people that have run into that issue.
And another question I saw about holding classes at regular times. So in Kentucky, we've held almost all of our classes at the exact same time, because that's what worked for the most of our students. But we have one class a week where we pulled the families, and they wanted to move the class earlier in the day because the kids are home from school. So most of our classes are the exact same time, and they've actually been the exact same length, even though we let the parents know they might be shorter because this is virtual. We're figuring it out. But every class we've taught, with the exception of one, has been the exact same length. And that just goes down to lesson planning. I'm going to do one more technology demo before we talk about lesson plans, folks. So take notes on this. When you do a screen share, and that opens a dialog box for screen sharing, At the bottom of that first box in the bottom left-hand corner, there will be two options for you. One is share computer sound, and the other is optimize for full screen video clip. I'm going to click both of those now, and then I'm going to share a Riverdance video with you. And what I want to check, and Courtney, you let me know, is if the sound comes through okay, and if the video looks clear or if it looks pixelated.
Yep. Got your screen in the model.
A little pixelated for me. How does that look, Courtney?
Not great.
Okay, let me try another way. So I keep experimenting with this in my own job. I'm going to stop sharing. I'm going to reshare, and I'm going to not click optimize for full screen video clip. And let's see how
that works. We have a lot of reports from the chat. Pixelated, delayed.
Okay, let's try it this time. Any better?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, good. There's a little delay on my end.
There's a little bit of a delay here too.
Yeah.
Yeah, video quality is a little better.
That's good. So that's just to show you all that it's not foolproof. Sometimes you can share a video successfully, but if anyone's bandwidth or connectivity is a little poor, it's going to come through less than ideal. Interestingly, the first time I showed it to you, and it was the more poor of the two, I clicked optimize for full screen video clip. But it did not optimize at all. So just know that that doesn't seem to work. I don't quite know why that's a buggy feature on Zoom. What you could do, for example, if you needed to share a video with your students in the context of class, is already have it ready to go on YouTube unlisted, or on Vimeo unlisted, or in Google Drive, right? And put the URL for that video in the chat box and write, okay, students, go watch this video and come on back. Right? If you needed to do it that way, just because it's not entirely reliable that videos will convey well in Zoom.
And on that note, you might even experience, you know, if you're doing the gallery view with your students and you're asking them, you know, 5, 6, ready, go, it might take a few more seconds. It might lag. It might not be the best quality you've ever seen. But I try and live by the motto, done is better than perfect. And this experience does not have to be perfect. No one is expecting this to be exactly the same as doing it in person. That's why we do this in person, right? This is why we don't normally do this online. And as long as you are clear, I think, with your parents and your students that this is, you know, a temporary measure or a long-term temporary measure to, you know, provide the classes and services that you normally do. It's just going to be online, and there are technological, disadvantages to doing that.
Yeah. So what we're going to do now, folks, is go into the next section of today's webinar, which is on lesson planning. I'm going to talk about my beginner lesson plan briefly, and then Courtney will talk about her upper level classes and how she's preparing for those. And then we have some activities and prompts for you. So I'll start with the beginner level. We have three different beginner classes that overlap at our studio. One is for 3 and 4 year olds. One is for 6 plus, 5 plus, I suppose. And then the other kids stay a little bit longer to learn basic hard shoe. I kept the class at the same time. I kept the class at the same length. And I kept the class doing the exact same routine that they expect. We always start with the same warm-ups. We always go through our steps in a particular way. We even do them in particular parts of the studio. So I had them envision like standing on this line, now standing next to the mirror, so they knew exactly what steps to do. We do some back and forth with each other where I ask the children questions. They would raise their hand and my assistant, who was my tech host, would call on them and unmute their lines, and they'd answer their questions just like they would in the studio if I'd asked them a question. They dance their steps independently of my help. Remember I mentioned earlier I had dubbed my voice over music. So the first time they would do their reel, they'd dance it to the dub of my voice so they could hear me calling it. The second time they would dance it independently. I had a tech host assistant and I had a teenager assistant with me. And when the children were dancing, all three of us watched them in the gallery view. And we each picked out, like we normally do in class, different technique things we're going to focus on. So we were able to see all the children. Again, Courtney mentioned there's a lag, so it won't look like they're on time, and that will drive us all crazy, and we'll just have to deal with it. They'll be behind the music, but you can generally interpret that they are keeping an even beat, just it's coming through a second delayed. And we would give them feedback. They'd dance again. And then the hard shoe teaching for beginners, I did have some videos prepped. Next week, I'm actually just going to do it live. I'm going to teach them steps live and then have my assistants watch the children as they mimic and copy my movements. You're going to have to keep all the lines muted when you teach hard shoe because the audio will not work. To have 17 or whatever audio feeds of kids dancing heavy jigs. So that's unfortunate. But what you can do, if this is your practice in your studio, you could have them go line by line, virtual line by line, right? So call in three students at a time and have them dance an exercise. Next three, dance. Next three, dance. You can also call on them individually and unmute their line and listen to the sounds they're producing. So stuff like that. And it really was wonderful. I've heard great feedback from the parents this week that they're grateful that their kids are maintaining routine. They're staying active. I gave them homework. So they're sending me videos of their practicing. And just try to keep as much normal as possible while also still teaching them new material along our curriculum. So I'll stop there. And Courtney, over to you to talk about upper levels.
Yeah, I mean, and you'll find that a lot of the things that Allison just talked about will overlap with what I'm about to say with the upper levels, you know, novice, prize winner, championship, your more competitive students. So we have a set of warm-ups that take them through like their cardiovascular fitness and their joint mobilization and dynamic stretching, where it's been a routine that's been established for a long time. Although we normally, you know, do laps around the studio, it's something that they can absolutely do in place. We do it when we go to majors, so they can very easily adapt to that. And I will call and lead that while everyone's muted the same way I would in regular class. This will actually be nicer for me because I wish there was a mute button in regular class. So this is going to be great. When we do our dynamic stretches, usually I nominate a student to count the reps for everybody so that we all stay on pace. What I'll probably do for the first few times is I will just be the caller for that. As we go on and everyone gets a little bit more comfortable, maybe I'll nominate a student again. I'm going to set a timer for them to change their shoes because they should be ready to go. So if it's a soft shoe day, you know, put your soft shoes on, you have 3 minutes. If it's hard shoe day, they'll have the same, you know, same thing change. Initially, I will have everybody on mute. There's a button that says mute all. I will mute all. And then we typically go into our drills. We have a set of drills that we have for jig music, for hornpipe music, and drills, a drill sequence that we do to reels for soft shoe. That this is a sequence that's been well enough established that they will be familiar so that if I say, okay, we're doing our treble jig rhythm series. Normally in the studio, we'd make two lines all facing the mirror. In this case, I'll have that gallery view and I fully intend on muting online, you know, person by person. Okay, Susie, I want to hear, you know, the treble forward. Okay, unmute her, have her go, give her any feedback. For me, I would rather take the time to individually go through and make sure there's nothing terribly wrong before I have them do it in full sequence and going over and over and over again. So once I've kind of gone through everybody, then I will say, okay, row one, right? Like those four little top row screens, you guys do the treble jig rhythm series. Same thing, they'll be able to hear me. I'll give them the feedback just as if I was looking at them in the studio, move on to line two and so on. I think the more challenging part for the students and for teachers is how you manage the step repetition, or that for us, I think in the upper level classes is going to be even more challenging than teaching steps because as Allison said, if they can see you and they can see your feet, they will mimic and, you know, learn steps the same way as they do in class. Whereas our upper level dancers, they do need to be either repeating steps, or maybe you're at the point in the year where you're trying to do, everyone has different names for them, ladders, build-ups, pyramids, kind of that stamina building. And what I would encourage people to do is build a rhythm series or build a set of drills that they can do back to back for either a full jig or a full hornpipe, or if you're used to doing, you know, two fulls, make it long enough for two fulls, something that they can do in place, which I already have implemented, but it's something that you might want to think about and use your lesson planning time for. Develop that so that they're able to kind of build their endurance just in a slightly different way. Give them feedback as they go, as you would normally. And then we're going to finish each class with not only a cool down stretch that I'll lead for them, but we're also going to do some type of goal setting or mindset activity just to keep everybody's mental health up. It's going to be hard, I think, for all these kids. They've been very shaken up, and it's hard to be on your own. It's hard to do this on your own. And I think for a lot of those upper level dancers, it's hard not to have something on the horizon. You know, they're used to having like their next fest to look forward to or their next major to look forward to. And all that is just so uncertain that for me as a teacher, I want to make sure their mental health is good too.
Thanks so much. So we have questions in the chat box that I do want to attend to, but I also wanted to let you all know what our plan was at this point in the webinar. So you can kind of choose what you'd like to do. Our plan at this point was to allow you all just like 3 minutes of independent processing time. If you want to start brainstorming and sketching things out, if you have questions. After that 3 minute period, we're going to actually send you into breakout groups. We're going to send the 118 people on this call into 25 separate breakout rooms to have conversation around a question that we'll give you. But during this 3 minutes, if you want to just, you know, zone out and kind of process what you've heard, please do that. I'll put the timer on. If you want to keep typing questions into the chat box, we will type back with you and we'll fill questions at the end. Okay. So type questions to us or spend 3 minutes on your own. I'm going to pause the recording so this does not get recorded in the resulting video.
Sure. So one of the questions that I've seen come up a lot in the chat box, even as we were finishing up kind of the last lesson plan talk, was about what to do for fees. And a lot of us are the owners of our studios. We're worried about, you know, paying our bills, and these bills are not going away. And many would argue that this format in a lot of ways is a little bit of extra work, or it's going to be a little bit of extra work for the short term. Like I said at the very beginning, we're trying to make this as quick and efficient and practical as possible for everybody, but you will have to do a little bit of prep work. You might have to pre-record, you know, some new steps that you want to teach, whatever works best for you. So I would implore everyone on the webinar today to not feel apologetic about charging their same fees. Instead, make sure you're adding lots of value. For me personally, that has come in the form of telling students that they can join other appropriate online classes. If I have two classes of the same level that meet on two different days, I told them, hey, you're more than welcome to jump into that extra class. One benefit of having this online platform is that it's not extra bodies in the room. It's just more friendly faces on your gallery view. And as long as it doesn't become overwhelming or you don't have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of students, it shouldn't be too bad. And for parents, that's a value add, that they can attend other classes, which for them is free. The other thing that I've added in, or, you know, invited students to do is, you know, hey, on this platform, you know, it sometimes can be a little bit harder to get that individual feedback. You're welcome to send me videos of your rounds or your steps, and I will send you a voice memo correction back. And you know what? You'd be surprised how few people will take you up on that offer. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't sound bad to say, but the ones that didn't send in the videos or didn't use that included value, I'm going to be less likely to help them if they complain. So it just shows you who is willing to do everything that you're going to put out there for them, and who just likes to complain. We all have those people. Someone asked what I use for voice memo. If you have an iPhone, it's just, I think it's just called Voice or Voice Memo. I have an Android phone, so I use something called Smart Recorder. what I do is I sit and watch a video and I just talk into my phone all the corrections as if I was watching it live, and then I'm able to send it out to them in an email. So that's what I do. So that's the fee question and like how to add value to this. Allison, you've done more homework assignments, and there's questions about homework assignments and how you facilitate those.
Yeah, so I mean, they've been very minor because the homework I assigned was semi videos of you dancing so I can give corrections. And that does require parental involvement, especially for very small children. And as with all of us, the world is upended and parents are scrambling to figure out childcare and school at home and work and, you know, all the things that are happening. So I didn't want to assign too many videos. So for this week, for my little ones, I just assigned 2 videos. And some of them have come in and it's been great. And then I provide feedback, either written or voice memo. Voice memo is a lot faster for me than texting or typing. So I tend to do voice memos as well. Some of our upper level teachers have created practice plan frameworks, and the students are required to fill out their practice plan, to give tallies for everything they practice, to actually write down what it is they're focusing on technique wise on what part of their dancing. And then they're required to submit their practice logs. So that's another part of the homework. And then fun things too, because one of the things that's been so delightful about this is seeing the children's practice spaces, and also seeing the children who don't have practice spaces, who should, who want to win at a FESH, but they obviously don't have a dance floor at home, which is kind of peculiar. So I'm inviting like the young children to do a show and tell next Sunday, where truly it's just for the delight of it. Like they can bring their favorite toy or stuffed animal or book or something to share with their friends in dance class. Because part of what we really care about in our dance school is maintaining that community and that connection. That has been so important for our champ and prize winner class, which for us is combined. They're pretty small. So we combine them. They loved getting together so much for their first class that one of our teachers set up a Zoom lunch hour for them the next morning or the next day, because they wanted to have lunch together. So stuff like that too, just your kids are going to be starved for socialization and their friends. So, you know, encourage them to get together on their own Zooms and practice, and they can send you a video of their practicing. Like that could be homework, stuff like that.
And another common question that came up earlier was about managing parental involvement in this. And earlier Allison and I were talking about, you know, expectations and classroom rules and trying to get that to mimic your brick and mortar space. And for me, we don't allow parents in the dance studio as far as like in their child's class. Even the 2.5 to 4-year-olds, they come in independently, and their parents are able to watch, you know, through a monitor in the waiting area. That, you know, they can keep tabs on it, but they're not actually able to go in the class space. So for those younger students, you know, they're going to need a little bit of help with the tech. And so just establishing some ground rules for your parents of, you know, hey, you can come to the online class with them, but keep in mind, we're trying to keep our normal routine. That means that only, you know, you are there for tech assistance, and, you know, getting them to realize that this isn't a FaceTime with their friend, or, you know, like with, you know, cousins or auntie or whoever, this is a class, you know, they can't wander off. And just getting those younger students to realize, you know, we all want that outcome that Allison has had so far, where they raise their hand and ask if they need to tie their shoe, just like they would in your real class. And I think for some of them, it'll just be a little bit of an adjustment. And once that adjustment period is over, it should be business as usual. And parents can watch from across the room if they really want to.
And they did. And they stayed in the background and laughed as their children.
Yeah. And that's how we want them.
Yeah. It was pretty precious. So we're just 2 minutes past 6 o'clock Eastern time, US and Canada. So I want to bring this webinar today to a close, but I want to thank you all for coming together. I think it's one of the silver linings of this really terrible time is that we are all coming together as a teaching community, as bearers of this beautiful tradition that is ours, to support one another. So thank you all for being here. Godspeed, best of luck. We can all do this. And some folks have said we should do another webinar. So stay tuned. I'm sure in a month you guys can host webinars and we'll hop on to hear what you did. So thank you all. Best of luck.
Yeah, and thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.